Say something.
Hello.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you have tuned in to hear some advice or inspiration on travelling, this is not the podcast. We're going to be speaking purely about UFC. And if you have tuned in for travelling stuff, check out my other episode, the one before this, episode 24, where I talk about the best episodes I've done to check out. So yeah, just check out that one and you'll understand more. But this is purely UFC talk, hence the title. And this is the third one that we've done now, so it's become a thing. And as always, I'm joined by Aaron.
Hello.
A Dubs Phelps. So I guess the first thing that we should start off talking about is Christmas Day. And how many of you out there saw a UFC superstar on Christmas Day? Because we saw one.
Oh yeah. Superstar.
There we went to the beach in Sydney, and we walked past none other than Richard Walsh, who recently won at UFC 193. A bit random, but yeah, that was an interesting start to Christmas Day.
Enjoying his Christmas, I guess, enjoying his time off and waiting for his next fight. Probably going to be in Brisbane, I guess. That's the next Australian card, isn't it? Brisbane in March.
Yeah, people like that, they usually put them on their local cards. They used to have the European ones where the English fighters would just go on English cards, and then if they become a big deal, or they do better or have some big wins like Whittaker's got, then they start bumping him up and putting him on pay-per-views and that.
Well, we're talking about Whittaker. We're talking quite a bit on Christmas Day because obviously that's when we found out about the Bisping and Anderson Silva fight.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about that on Christmas Day and then saying who else could be on that card, and we were talking about Whittaker and his next fight because obviously he was supposed to fight Bisping. So I'm assuming that could be his chance to headline. He's just come off a big win in that middleweight division.
Right.
Whether or not they'll give him a fight at middleweight on that card in Brisbane, that'd be quite interesting.
He's at the two press conferences fan Q&As that we saw of Dana White. A question that came up in both of them is, who have you got your eye on as the biggest star in this part of the world? Well, they said Australia, and then he said Whittaker, he's a Kiwi, but he kind of trains out of Sydney, so they know he's about, like, they know he's doing big things and they want to work with him. So yeah, he could headline that, or they might put him on a pay-per-view. I don't know.
Be interesting, though, because we were trying, obviously now they've got Musasi
and Talis Latest
fighting. That whole division is kind of, if he's looking in front of him about the top fighters, the only ones I can think of are Belfort and Dan Henderson. I mean, fighting against Dan Henderson, I'd expect him to win, and it would be it'd kind of be interesting if he won, he could always say, you know, I beat Dan Henderson. There's always going to be that, yeah, you beat Dan Henderson, who's 55. But
I don't know, Dan Henderson's, he's just obviously a legend. He's obviously just a bit slower to the punch and stuff these days. And he's now starting to get knocked out, whereas he never used to get knocked out. But he's still dangerous. I mean, Tim Boach is a tough guy and a guy who's been there in the best. And Dan Henderson, like, blitzed him in under a minute. So he's still a dangerous guy. And Dan Henderson's a guy, if you look at his record and look at who he's fought, it is ridiculous, the people he's fought over the last sort of 10 years or whatever. You look at that, each one, you're like, holy shit. Like, there's no thing where you don't look at it and go, okay, that person was a bit of a step back. It's all name after name after name. It would be Shogun, Fedor Emelianenko, Jake Shields, and then Vitor Belfort, and who else he fought? Daniel Cormier.
Never got the fight with John Jones.
Yeah, but that was on his record. And you look at all the people he's fought, you're like, holy shit. Like, the level of people this guy's fighting, there's no break, there's no end. So,
But then the only thing I would say for Whittaker is that he'd be fighting Dan Henderson to kind of again, not saying his fight is getting announced, but I'm just thinking about guys in the division, it'd be fighting him because of the name, because I don't actually think Henderson's ranked at the moment.
Is he not?
I don't think so. No, I think he's lost his last two, hasn't he?
I thought he'd beat Boach in between the loss to Musasi and Belfort. I don't know.
Oh, maybe he did. I thought there was... Well, no, I mean, he got... As far as I was aware, what he's not ranked at the moment. He's not ranked in the top 15.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, Whittaker's not coming towards the end of the career and they're trying to throw him into a title shot as quickly as possible. I mean, if they put that together, it would still be a good fight night card. And I think it would be a test. I wouldn't think that Whittaker would walk through Dan Henderson. I think he'd go in his favourite, being an athlete in his prime, but Dan Henderson's still Dan Henderson. People say he's a one-trick pony, but what a trick it is. It's still dangerous, and Tim Boach walked right into it. It's still there. I'd say it'd offer challenges, and if he does come through it, then it builds his star even more.
I would say give him Vitor.
Guess another one. It's still a tough matchup.
It is, and it's good for both of them, because win for Vitor kind of starts to put some credibility back. He's obviously always going to have that kind of, for his wins against Rockhold and Bisping, he's always going to have the kind of drugs TRT against him, and then he's kind of started to lost to Weidman.
Well, they say have the drugs against him. People will call him TRT Vitor, which I'm not sure is the correct name for him, because it's well documented that his body changed between getting a title shot and fighting Weidman. Yet his testosterone levels apparently were through the roof when he fought Weidman. So if he's still using testosterone, his body's changed that much, was that body down to pure testosterone? Was he using testosterone just more than he was against Vitor? So people call him TRT Vitor, but it's kind of a guy that is celebrated in a way, because TRT Vitor was so good. It's like people don't look at him and go, oh, that's a drug cheat. It's kind of celebrated that we had a guy who was just that good. But yeah, I mean, he's a different fighter off him. He certainly looks different and didn't compete the same as he had in those fights against Weidman.
Well, I mean, we've spoke about another guy potentially before who could have been, whose body's changed slightly. I think you actually posted a picture of him in your last, but I mean, for our last podcast. But actually, that was before our last coming, kind of linking it to our last podcast for that UFC Cerrone Dos Anjos. But I mean, maybe he's not. Maybe he's just, Dos Anjos is just getting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to.
Better.
I don't want to throw around any accusations. Like, the only reason that people accuse him of being on drugs is because he performed that well against Pettis. It's like, holy shit, this guy's so good, he must be on drugs.
Yeah.
There's no real substance to it. So, you know, I'm not going to.
Although that picture.
People. When you sort of do train and stuff, you learn what works and what doesn't, and what you listen to your body, you clean up your diet. I mean, apparently he was against Khabib Nurmagomedov. He was experimenting with a vegan diet, so he's still like experimenting with what works and stuff, and you're kind of refining his techniques in training and rest and recovery. So, I mean, that picture I put up was hugely different. Like, hugely.
He was a lot younger as well. Like, I was just making a joke, but yeah, he was a lot younger. But his performance in that fight against Cerrone, I think, kind of just showed how far he's come. Possibly the Pettis fight wasn't the fluke, and maybe he is putting himself out as that guy who's that good.
Quickly going back to the drugs thing, the one thing that he said and his coach said, he said, I hope that win puts to bed all the accusations of me being on drugs. Well, it doesn't. It was a very good performance, but it's got nothing to do with putting the rumours to drugs to bed. I mean, I don't think he is on them, and I'm not going to accuse him, certainly not. I think podcast, but it wasn't like, oh shit, he just knocked out Donald Cerrone in 1 minute. He's obviously not on drugs. I was wrong. It's not, you don't, the two things aren't go, don't go in hand in hand.
No, but I think what he was trying to say was when he fought Pettis, that was before the whole USADA thing came in. And so now people are saying, oh, now that USADA are around, is Dos Anjos going to be able to put in as good as a performance? And the fact that he did, now we spoke about it before, that the USADA thing coming in is great to try and clean up the sport, but we know that there's still going to be ways around it. It's going to take a while for them to ever, there's always going to be ways of trying to kind of mask what, if people were using and they can still use. But I think that was the point he was trying to make, like, I'm now being tested more regularly. People might say, oh, it's going to, because I think Cerrone was the one who said it. Cerrone said,
he said it on Tate Fletcher's podcast.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
He said, what do you know, anybody, do you think fighters are on, I'm paraphrasing this, and I love Cerrone, and I really like that Pirate Life podcast, actually. But he was on it, and the question was something like, do you think there's anyone on drugs? And he said something like, yeah, the guy I'm fighting, Dos Anjos, and then the UFC picked up on it and weren't happy about it.
Yeah, that might have been the one, but he made another comment, I think, on another, in an interview, just saying, how do you rate his performance against Pettis? And, you know, he gave him all the credit, but he said something along the lines of, we'll see if I'll be fighting the same guy. I don't know if I'll be fighting the same guy that fought Anthony Pettis. But, he put, I think, a lot of that to rest. It was a solid performance, and it was an interesting event. Conor McGregor was getting called out left, right, and centre. I think people are starting to realise that he's the one who's probably going to be making the money for these guys now.
I think it's that, and I think it's people, they think that they can beat him as well, some of them. I know that's what I think for Diaz it's a money thing. I think for the other two it's kind of that Oliveira and Dos Anjos, I think they're looking at that thinking, oh, I could beat him, really, and then that makes me more famous.
Yeah, Charles Oliveira is a bit of a difficult one, because I think we said afterwards he didn't even make weight.
Yeah, and it's not the first time.
So he's not in any position. When he was calling out Conor, I wasn't sure if he was calling him out at 145 or 155.
Yeah, 149.
he's not in a position at the moment. And also, he just I don't think he's in. Actually, it brings me back, or it brings us nicely on to what we're going to talk about today, which is 195, but he picked up a victory, and then he was kind of calling out the champ, which is fair enough, but Matt Brown has done the same. Matt Brown has said he wants to fight the winner of Condit Lawler this week. And I kind of think, I get what you're doing. You're putting yourself in that frame, but you're coming off the back of
a win against Tim Means.
And before that, you lost to Hendricks and Lawler.
Mm.
So I don't think you're in a position at the moment to be saying, I'm next in line for that shot. Your last fight, you know, he got injured. That happened. So I'm not going to discredit him for that. But he got injured, so he hasn't. Had he had that fight against Kelvin? Was it Kelvin? Kelvin, and beaten him. Maybe he's got more reason to be throwing his name in the hat. And then him and Woodley went back and forth, because Woodley's like, "You sit back down, mate. I think you'll find I'm next."
Well, I think we spoke about this loads at the time. It's probably the one thing in life that we kind of agreed on, and that was the fact that Carlos Condit got that shot was a bit, not on ability and excitement, but it's in terms of win and rankings, whether you take the rankings with a pinch of salt or not, it seemed a bit odd, because he was on a run of one win. Well, that's the same as Matt Brown, like, and he's an exciting fighter and he's a stand-up guy. Well, so is Matt Brown. So there's similarities, and I'm sure that Lawler and Condit would be a great fight. Well, Lawler and Matt Brown was a great fight, and I'm sure Condit and Brown would be. So actually, Matt Brown isn't in that much of a different position to what Condit is.
And that's probably why he's done it. He's probably thought to himself, actually, the one thing I think Condit has is that, albeit interim, he's been at that level. He was the interim champion. He's kind of fought the top guys.
But Matt Brown had the 7-fight win streak, what it was, and the two guys he lost to were Lawler and Hendricks. And the Lawler one, Lawler looked a bit better and pretty much won, definitely won the fight. But Matt Brown still looked good in it. He wasn't outclassed. He still got his shots on. You'd give him at least one round. Some people gave him two. Handful of people, not many, gave him the win. It was still a good fight. And, yeah, the Hendricks won. I think that was a great showing by Hendricks. And I think he was unfairly criticised for that. Because if you're fighting Matt Brown and you're a decorated wrestler, like, what are you going to do? Why would you stand in front of someone who's as wild and dangerous as Matt Brown? Like, you're going to play to your strengths and his weaknesses.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Hendricks is probably thinking to himself now, let's just forget about the title and let's just make some money, because I assume, I don't know his game plan, but he's probably going to go back to his wrestling against Thompson. You know, we've seen what he can do. He's a karate expert and throwing those kicks. I don't think Johnny seems to take a lot of hits, and he seems to take them well, but it's going to be one of those things where your body and your chin can only take so much, and he's been in two wars with Lawler, so I imagine he's probably going to go back to his, if he can turn up in good shape and make weight, he'll go back to his wrestling, and if he wrestles him, he'll have the same game plan. And actually, it was interesting because it actually got fight of the night when Hendricks fought Condit, I think on the co-main for the Diaz GSP
fight. Going back some time,
and what was interesting is that Hendricks' strategy was quite simple. He charged in with like two or three punch combos, then got a takedown.
Yeah.
And Condit got back up each time, but that happened for two rounds. I think Condit won the last round. Yeah. And I got fight of the night, probably because of that last round. But Hendricks' strategy there was punch, punch, takedown, and then win that round. And then next round did the same. He's going to do the same, I guess, against Stephen Thompson. But it just seems to be one of those things now where, I mean, he's made an enemy in Dana by missing weight as well.
I mean, that is a thing, like, because we used to, going back to what I kind of like highlighted it and we didn't explain it fully, like, we were both in agreement that he kind of got screwed because he was supposed to fight Robbie again. And I actually think that Robbie won the first fight and Hendricks won the second fight. It's both very close. They're both great fights. You've made the point that they're kind of five rounds apiece over the two fights, and that they were supposed to have another one, then Rory got the shot, which was fine because Rory McDonald had been doing so well. They both deserved a shot.
Yeah.
And Hendricks did a courageous thing where he's like, okay, I'll take a step back and I'll fight Matt Brown, who's a dangerous guy. What? Fought him, won decisively, and then Dana was kind of unimpressed with it and then reluctant to give him the next title shot, and then but then he screwed himself by missing weight badly against Tyron Woodley.
I don't think it was a courageous move. I just think Johnny said that Robbie Lawler said he wants to take a few months off. He had quite a busy 2014, and Johnny said, "I'll take a fight in between."
Well, that's quite brave, so knowing that you're in line, you're risking that, because if you lose to Matt Brown, you can't go, right, Robbie's back, I'm fighting for the belt.
It was a risky move, but then it was already announced. They already announced the Lawler McDonald fight, I think, as soon as the McDonald Lombard fight fell through.
Yeah.
And so Johnny was kind of thinking, well, now actually now I'm just keeping busy, because I remember him saying something like, well, I've kind of screwed myself, because if I beat Matt Brown, I'm not going to be getting that summer title shot against Lawler, because now he's got McDonald booked. So now he's going to have to keep himself extra.
But yeah, I felt he was unlucky, because I felt that I did think he beat GSP, although I was hugely impressed with GSP for coming back in the fifth round, and Johnny took the round off, and he made the same mistake against Laura. Laura just not being active enough and fit enough in the last two rounds, and he pretty much gave it away. But I thought he was sort of unlucky in a couple of fights not to get the decision, and the fact that he wasn't defeated and then he got written out of the title picture when he arguably won the one he lost. And
well, that one as well, the other thing as well, we talked about being five rounds each, and I was just double checking, it's the second defeat, or sorry, the second title fight against Lawler was a split decision. So there's one judge that had it in Hendricks' favour. The first fight was unanimous. I thought he won that first fight, Hendricks. I actually thought he probably won the second one as well, but he ends fights quite badly. That fight with Lawler just kind of staring him down and walking him down. But if he can beat Wonderboy, who knows? Well, I mean, I don't know what's next for Woodley as well. Woodley's kind of doing a film at the moment and waiting for his shot.
Doing a podcast, I think I heard.
Not this one, I hope.
Well, I hope. If we can get Woodley on here, that'd be...
Well, then I'm out, ain't I?
I can do a three-way. I don't know. Woodley is obviously banking on the fact that he gets a title shot next, but you should people should realise and that people have been promised title shots before and they've fallen through. I.e. Hendricks and McDonald kind of both, and then McDonald end up getting it, but just because you get promised one doesn't necessarily mean it materialises, because things can happen. Lawler and Condit could quite easily go into a big war and it could be a draw and then they have to fight again, or it could be a close decision, and you know that means that Woodley's going to be waiting around for well over a year then.
My ideal scenario, if I was WWE and I was writing it up, I would have Condit, and we'll get on to our predictions later, but I'd have Condit win and then Condit fight Woodley, because I think those two have some, they have a fight, but kind of the way it ended,
yeah,
I'd like to see them. I mean, don't get me, I'm not taking anything away from Woodley, yeah. It's his takedown that injured the knee, but it was just a strange way to finish.
Yeah, it was a weird one, because it wasn't a case of, oh, like when Woodley won, it's like, oh, Woodley's so dominant, he completely ripped apart Carlos Condit, you know, he's well up in the rankings. It's like, oh, we'll take nothing away from him, but it was an injury, it's a bit ambiguous, like, I'm not sure. And you don't, when you sort of, if you were to match them up, you don't go, well, Woodley won in the first one, so he's going to be clear favourite. It's kind of, it's his positive moves and his training, but at the same time, it wasn't a concrete, solid win.
I mean, it was one of those things where he could probably take him down another two or three times and he might not land on his knee in that way. I think that was a little bit... So I'd like to see those two fight again, and it makes sense if Woodley has been promised the next shot. And then for Lawler, give him Hendricks. They need that rubber match, and then that'll be, you know, you could probably stick those two on the side. I mean, again, this is me.
Stack division, though. There's so many other people in that, isn't there, from what I remember?
Well, then you've got Lombard and McDonald's. They're saying they're going to fight again.
Matt Brown's still in the mix.
Matt Brown's, yeah. So I'm saying that you could do it that way and say, okay, well, Condit, Woodley, you finish what we started in the first fight. Lawler, Hendricks, you two are tied at the moment. You have another fight. Mm. And then we'll see what happens with McDonald's. Lombard. I think the thing with McDonald is it was fight of the year, it was given fight of the year, him and Lawler, but I don't think a win over Lombard would put him straight back in the title picture. He still needs to,
you've got to win a couple, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if Lombard gets back and fails another drugs test, let's give it to, you've got Matt Brown versus McDonald. You've got some interesting fights to make, but then this is me. What I would do if this was scripted, it's not scripted, and we have no idea what's going to happen. Like, one of the guys could get seriously injured this week, and you know, Lawler could win and then say, oh, I'm out, I've got a broken hand, I'm out for 9 months, and then suddenly the other guys can fight each other. Woodley wouldn't want to sit on the, you know, this is, for a lot of these guys, they've still got to make their money and make their living, so Woodley will probably say, well, now I've got to take a fight. So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen at that division. But we can, I guess, move on to that when we start doing our predictions.
So we
were talking about Cerrone as well. Just jump back to that. Cerrone put out a message on Instagram saying that he's got an announcement coming soon about his next fight.
He's probably fighting on that Boston card. he'll want to get straight back in there. And that's what people said about his performance against Dos Anjos, is that he fights every 2-3 months and he had to take 6 or 7 months off. Because they made him wait for the Dos Anjos fight and he was sort of cold. But yeah, going back to that card.
Khabib. Khabib wants to fight in March time, I think.
Should be interesting. I mean, Khabib's obviously great, but he keeps getting injured, which is a shame for everybody all around, really. But if he comes back, it makes it that division even more interesting. I'd say that's the most interesting division, the lightweight division.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I mean, it's quite a stacked division. I'll tell you what I'd like to see. Cerrone and Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, that'd be... I think you can do anything in that division. and they're going to be good fights.
Well, I think they're both coming off... well, Ferguson's coming off a win, and Cerrone wants to get back in there, depending on how, you know, we talk about these medical suspensions and what they really mean, but Cerrone will probably want to be on fighting within the next 2 or 3 months. He's a kind of guy that just wants to get back in there.
Especially after that, he'll be disappointed with that and wants to get that out of his system.
So that'd be, I mean, yeah, we'll see what he says. And then obviously we've got Connor waiting. You know, he might even want Diaz again, Cerrone. He might want to avenge that defeat, but Connor just sitting in the background waiting to make his next move.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder what he'll do in the UFC will do. A lot of people are saying that he'll get Diaz and then he'll get Frankie at UFC 200, something along those lines, which I think will be probably the smartest move for Diaz, Connor in the UFC. I mean, it's hard to pick against Connor at this point because he keeps saying, I'm going to do this in whatever round, I'm going to knock him out in what rounds one or two, and then does it. But at the same time, I think he's going to be in for a tough night against Edgar or Dos Anjos. I think they're both terrible matchups for anyone really, but yeah, I think they're tough matchups for him. And I think with Diaz, Diaz is a stand-up fighter and he'll be happy to stand up with Connor and trade shots and insults. And it's kind of, there's no way of putting, well, I don't want to put it like this, but it's like protecting him from the Wolves or whatever. It's like another fight they can build, add another win to Connor's record, because I think he would come through that. I'm not saying it'd be walk in the park, but the style suits him, so I think he'd come through that. But sooner or later, you're going to have to sort of start throwing him into against some horrible matchups for him. So I think
we just threw him against the pound for pounds.
We did, but it's still a nice style for him. They knew that Aldo was going to stand up with him. So obviously it's throwing him to the Wolves. But yeah, take nothing away from me. He said he's going to do this. He said, we're going to both meet in the ring. We're going to both throw down and we'll see what happens. And you know, he predicted it and he did it. But again, it's kind of a nice sort of style for him, or a good style that suits his style, is a better way of putting it, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the fight, I guess, for you, the fight for everyone is that if he gets past Edgar at 145,
yeah,
he's cleaned out that division.
Yeah.
And yeah. In quite a quick time, I think that's when he can kind of... I kind of agree with when he first beat Aldo, there was a lot of talk about him going up to 155 and getting a title shot straight away.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the idea of that. Thinking if Cerrone was to win, that would be another good matchup. Watching Dos Anjos, you kind of think, okay, this guy is quite tough. He took apart Pettis and then he's just taken apart Cerrone.
Yeah.
So maybe it does make sense, like you said. And it's actually better for Edgar, for him to fight Diaz, beat Diaz, and then fight Edgar, because that train is still rolling, so to speak.
Yeah.
He's still making that money. If he was to fight Dos Anjos and win, I mean, that's amazing. Edgar's fighting a two-weight champion. If he was to fight Dos Anjos and lose, even though Connor's still kind of, you know, I don't think he would ever lose it, he'd still be able to hype it up.
But it's not cute anymore, is it?
You lose that little bit of edge, and every time he says something like I'm the best, you'll have Dos Anjos being like, well, I beat you.
Yeah.
So I think for Edgar, it's probably best that he fights Diaz, or he just fights Edgar next.
Yeah. The other thing about Diaz as well is kind of a few people were a bit annoyed about him kind of jumping the queue at lightweight. I get he's a different fighter and he makes money and blah de blah, but I still like a bit of structure and a bit of fairness. And I think
Do you like structure and fairness? You're barking it wrong true to UFC, mate.
Well, I like some logic to it. You know, like I said, I thought Hendricks got a bit screwed over. And if it was a different division where there was kind of a dominant champ, say if he'd done all this at bantamweight and then he went up to featherweight, And it was like, no one's beating Aldo. And it's like, well, there's no one else who's doing it, so put me in. But the fact that it is just a newish champion, and the fact there is other people there, you can kind of match them all up and kind of make it a bit more clear. Because there's quite a few contenders in that division. And also with the fact that Diaz just beat the number five guy, then it's like, okay, he's fighting a top 10, top five guy or whatever. And then he puts himself right in the mix then by doing that, if he beats him.
I think they all know. I mean, what started out, I think, as when he was fighting Brimage and Brandao and Holloway, I think a lot of people were probably annoyed at Conor and his trash talk. And what started out, I think, as people saying, I want to fight Conor just so I can shut him up, I think is now people have started to realise, I want to fight Conor to make that money.
Yeah, and beat him, and be the first guy to, well, obviously not the first guy to beat him, but the first guy in the UFC to beat him in the sort of modern era, the new Conor 2.0 or whatever you want to call him. And there's people, like I see, that's Oliveira, I think he's, Oliveira's thinking, if I can take him down, like I'm going to dominate him on the ground. Like Oliveira's a high level black belt, and obviously Conor's not no slouch at grappling, but compared to Oliveira, he's not in the same standard. So I think that's Oliveira's thinking, what, my style beats him. And I think I'd need to see the top 10 again, but I looked at, I think it was what's his name, the Iranian guy, Benil Dariush. I think that would be a shocking matchup for Conor. I think that would be
155.
Yeah, I think that'd be real tough. Not that he'll get the Conor fight, but I think if they matched him up, that would be real tough. It's just not stylistically good. And even Evan Dunham, after seeing what he did to Ross Pearson, I know it's a different kind of Conor's sort of higher, bigger star than Ross Pearson, but Ross Pearson, a stand-up fighter, just got mauled by Evan Dunham, and I'd think those two would be a bad style for Conor.
Benil Dariush, that was the guy who beat or got the win over Michael Johnson.
Yeah,
because that ended up being a stand-up.
It did, but Michael Johnson's a wrestler and is not going to be taken down by Dariush, which is why it kind of became a stand-up. But I said this before about Conor, and I'll say it again in terms of the fight of Edgar. Conor is a guy who prepares for every situation. So if I don't think that what Mendes did to Conor, Frankie will be able to do it in that style. Like Conor's, we all know that Frankie's a solid wrestler and got a big wrestling background, and Conor knows that. So you know he's not going to sit there and think, oh well, I just hope he won't wrestle me and hope he'll stand with me. He knows that Frankie's going to wrestle him, so we're going to look at all the takedowns that Frankie does and thinking, right, what to look out for? Okay, he's going to duck in. Are we going to throw a kick or a knee, or are we going to develop this huge sprawl? They're going to be looking at how to combat that. They're not just going to sit back and let Frankie take them down.
And that was the only thing I would have said about the Mendes fight, is that he was, even though Mendes did come in at 2 weeks or 3 weeks' notice, he was taking Conor down quite easy, but Conor wasn't preparing for it.
Yeah.
And he had the knee injury,
yeah,
which a lot of people forget. So I agree with you there. I think the team, Kavanagh and I don't actually know the rest of his team, most of them his training partners, aren't they?
Artem,
yeah. Gunner.
But yeah, I agree with that. So it's 2 weeks for both.
Ryan Hall.
Okay, but Conor didn't have that chance to prepare to watch Mendes, because it must take a long time. They must spend a couple of days watching videos, a few days, and go, okay, this is what we'll look for, this is what we'll do, and then they start drilling it. And he said he drilled that right hand, so that must have taken days. And you don't have that when you take a fight at 2 weeks' notice.
And also, they were doing a lot of his training was coming to the end. It was almost like
you're tailing off last week. Yeah,
you're doing a lot of more media, so he wasn't getting in that practice time of takedowns. He was getting in the time of trying to cut weight and doing all the whatever he does, the sauna suits or the bath, but that's what he was.
That being said, at that point in time, there's one of two things I think that you kind of learn about Conor's grappling, and one of them, given the benefit of doubt, is that he did have this knee injury, so he wasn't able to. It could be the fact that he wasn't able to defend takedowns that well and was vulnerable to them, or the fact is grappling at that point, so is it July 2015? So at July 2015, his grappling was not up to that of someone who's been wrestling all their life. So that's up until July 15. But again, Conor's just not going to sit there and think, oh, well, I'll just hope I won't fight a wrestler. Like, he's gonna be doing grappling. He's going to be sprawling. So the question is whether his grappling can catch up to that of Frankie Edgar's.
It's probably not going to be able to catch up.
Or can they neutralise it?
Yeah.
Or can they come up with a strategy? So that becomes a question for me. Unless, because people say to him that, oh, you know, Chad took you down and whatever, and he says, oh, I still want to fight. And that's smart, because it might be the fact he couldn't defend because of his knee injury. So he's not going to say, oh, no, actually, I've been practicing grappling, it's actually quite good, because that doesn't give him an advantage. If he says, no, actually, it was really good, it's just my knee, then people are like, oh, he actually is really good at grappling, like, we can't do this. So he wants to think people think he's shit at grappling.
One thing I would say, whether or not he knew, so he makes this point of that fight of saying that he was hitting Chad in the right spots and he could see, he knew Chad was going to gas. Because he was not just was he hitting him with these body shots, but he knew that it was only a short camp for Chad. But one thing about Conor is that he seemed, and he said it if you watch the Ultimate Fighter, about being patient, he seemed very relaxed when he was on his back.
Yeah.
He got cut with the elbow, and he had that cut for the fight. But even then, at no point did it look like he was getting hit with shots that were hurting him. He was still... When you get hit with a shot and it's hurting you, your instinct is to kind of cover up.
Mm.
All he was doing was getting hit by shots and just saying to Mendez, is that all you've got, pussy? And that's all he was saying. And I think that's quite psychological, because I think Mendez must have been thinking,
oh, fuck, geez, no, I'm hitting, to guillotine him now.
I'm hitting this guy. I'm hitting this guy with shots. And Mendez is big. He's knocked out a lot of guys in that division. And this guy's just saying to him, is that what you've got, pussy? And he's probably thinking, well, this is the same shot that knocked out Lamas. And
I don't know.
It wasn't the same shot, obviously, he's on top. But it must have been getting in his head, thinking, I'm on top, I'm dominating, and all this guy is saying to me. Do you think Chad has ever been on got someone to the floor in a wrestling in the UFC and has been hitting them, and instead of them trying to, like, you know, control the hands or trying to position out, all they're saying is that you've got pussy?
Yeah, no, I don't think he has, but at the same time, I don't think it got in his head. Like, he knows what... You know, it's not a big surprise that Conor was doing that. Like,
I think it would have played a part. I think it would have played a part in what his plans were on the grounds. I think he's probably thinking to himself, okay, I'm not... Even though he's probably trying to ignore it, he's probably not used to that. Like, you don't get used to, and Conor always says it, the trash talk that Conor gives you before a fight. Mendez was trying to give it back. I mean, those two went back and forth for some time. I think before the Chad Aldo fight too, those two had a little thing on BT Sport. Where Conor made that famous comment about wrestling his balls on Chad's head. But I don't think you can ever get used to... If I was fighting you now and I had you on the grounds and I was hitting you and you were saying, is that what you've got, pussy? I'd be thinking, is that all I've got? I'd be thinking, is that... Why isn't this...
I don't know, because... When you're an athlete, it's called selective attention. It's like the ability to block out all insignificant things. And an example I think of is not a UFC, it's a golf example. And I always thought Colin Montgomery, the Scottish golfer, had pretty bad selective attention, because he'd get onto the tees and he'd be like, you over there, stop moving, can we have some quiet on the tee, blah, 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 and it's all this stuff is in his head. And his attention shouldn't be on that. His attention should be on the ball and the fairway, or the green if it's a par three. And that's a thing that athletes, which they should be developing. That's an external thing. That's something that they shouldn't let them affect. I've had it before in terms... When I've competed in tennis and football, and even like shitty beer pong and those games you're playing the other day, like, I don't let anything get in my head. I'm just focused on the game and what's the task in front. And that's me, and that was me as a younger version of myself as well. Just don't let things get in my head. And if that's me, I expect a professional athlete fighting for a world title to be the same.
Well, I agree with that, and I agree that he's done all these UFC fights and WEC. There's selective hearing about trying to get. In that scenario, he's probably been able to zone out the fans a lot. Mm. But what he's doing is he's fighting a guy in the octagon. And I think there's only you can zone out the fans if you've been doing it for a long time. If you're that high level athlete, you could probably zone out some of the prep going in beforehand. But would he have been used to? Because bear in mind his fights against Aldo, he did take Aldo down. But his other fights before, would he have been used to being on top of a guy, being in control of a fight, and that guy saying to him, "Is that what you've got, you pussy?"
Yeah, but I don't know if they should have known he was going to do that. And I don't know, I just think that when he was on top and when he went for that guillotine, I just thought he was knackered, and I just thought I'm going to use all my energy now to go for this guillotine, because if it carries on any longer, I'm not going to be able to do this for 5 rounds. And he wasn't strong enough to get the guillotine in place. That's what I read into that. And at the time, I said, "Oh, it's a bit of a weird stoppage." Not that Chad wasn't hurt, but he kind of, when he was on the floor, Connor just hit him once on the wrist, and that was it. Particularly after, on the Ultimate Fighter, there was a guy who beat the guy to a pulp for a minute, and then he just got up. So after watching that, and then watching Connor, I thought that was a bit odd. But then I thought, well, actually, Connor would have definitely finished him in the third or something like that. I think it was, in terms of fighter safety, I think Chad was pretty much done. I just think he was gassed and knackered.
He took a shot, and then he kind of fell up against the cage and took one of those lefts, and he just kind of went down and covered up. And I thought,
because it's 10 seconds left.
Yeah, and that's probably what was in his head. He probably caught a glimpse. You heard that you might have heard that the 10 seconds to go, and probably thought, actually, I can last into this round. And in actually going on that, the other side of it was that at the 194. Rockhold was beating Weidman to a pulp.
Yeah.
With about 40 seconds left.
And it's Herb Dean. It's weird, isn't it?
And I think Herb would have looked at that clock. The only thing I would say is that he probably thought Rockhold is a champion. I mean, neither Connor or Chad were the champions. Now, whether or not he thought, Weidman was the champion, Weidman was covering up. He was getting hit. He wasn't trying to escape. He probably thought, I don't want to give up my back to Luke. And he was just lying there. And there's a part of me that thought, Weidman probably thought, he's gonna jump in the minute and stop it.
Yeah.
But he got to the end. I think when I saw there was 10 seconds to go, from it being, I think he was on top from like 40 seconds, I thought, okay, Herb's gonna let this go to another round.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he got on top of him in the fourth, Herb jumped in quite quickly. He jumped in quite quickly, almost like Weidman went down, Rockhold gave him 2 shots, and Herb was like, "No, that's enough."
Yeah.
A bit like when he jumped in with Conor Chad. The only difference was that Chad didn't take the beating that Weidman took.
Regardless of that, I think that Conor would have won. And I maybe the trash talking did something, but I'd be disappointed if a professional athlete let that get in the head. Saying that, though, I said on the last episode, I thought that Aldo would be really well prepared for Conor, and he wasn't just going to come in and walk into a shot, and he did that, and that's a world champion. So maybe some of these guys aren't preparing or aren't as superior as
to be. It's a link to, again, the 195 event, but Dustin Poirier said he hadn't faced anyone like Conor before in the build-up, the trash talk, and then in the fight, like when you're going to touch gloves, he's still talking trash. He's like, like you said, there's one thing to try and block it out, but he said that he just hasn't experienced that before. And until you experience certain things, you can't go. Until you experience some guy just talking trash to you, almost for the whole camp, anytime Connor will say something, it'll be trying to put down Poirier. Even in the fight when he was hitting him, he was saying stuff.
Yeah.
I think Dustin said, and I mean,
that separates the weak from the chaff then. It's like those who can't hang with that will lose, and the ones who doesn't really bother them will the ones who have got a better chance of succeeding. Like, it's fair play to Conor, he's using something to his advantage, but yeah, the other guy should be not letting that get in the head.
Like, but we'll see. I mean, I'm looking forward to the Edgar fight when he does fight Frankie.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's gonna happen. He's the champ, and
it has to happen for his legacy. I know they said he can't make 145 again, But that was straight after he just made 145 and knocked out the pound for pound number one, who'd been champion for 10 years. So he wasn't feeling too bad. But it has to happen, really, because people, the one criticism people said is that he hasn't fought a top level grappler. I know you're going to say Chad, but you know, it's a 2 week notice, Chad. The fact that still remains that he's not fought a high level grappler. So he has to fight Edgar, because you can't just get the championship. There's an obvious number one contender and it's a grappler, and then you say, oh, I can't make 145 anymore. Like, he has to for his legacy, and if he does it, that's good for him, because that people, that gets that monkey off his back, and it cements that he's the 145 champion for definite. But if it was no obvious contender, then it would be like, okay, well, he doesn't have to. But it's a fact that Frankie's, he wanted a title shot before Conor got it, and then he went and beat Faber and Chad Mendes, and he's an obvious contender, so it kind of has to happen.
Yeah, and I think it will happen. I think Conor will want to stay active, so I think if it was up to him, he'd probably take, and Frankie likes to stay active, so I'm sure it would be a case of if they could do it, and they probably want to save it, like the UFC are probably trying to save it for a big event. Similar to kind of that, will be interesting actually, because if they are looking at it for UFC 200s, and Conor says I want to fight before then,
yeah,
because that would almost be two fights in a year for Conor, which is not what, well, Chad, Aldo, and then Frankie in July, December, July. That's not what he likes. I think he likes to fight more often.
He said he'd rather fight everybody within 4 months and whoop all these featherweights and clear out the division. But that's what he said.
So it'd be interesting if he says, I want to fight someone at 155, and they give him that fight, because the other side of it is that Holly is saying, I want to fight and have a fight, and yeah, they're saying no to Holly.
Yeah.
So that'll be quite interesting, because then that question comes up is, how much power does Conor have that Conor can say, I want this fight in March,
yeah,
before a fight in July? And if Holly says, I want this fight in March, and they're saying yes to one and no to the other, I think it shows that maybe the UFC is starting to give in to the power of some of the people. Which, one of the things I liked about UFC compared to boxing is that it was one organisation. They would pick and choose the fights. You'd always get the best people fighting,
yeah,
usually in their prime.
You don't get a Pacquiao a Mayweather situation.
Yeah.
It can't happen. It's just, if you're in the same division, you're contracted the same company, if you keep winning, you have to fight, eventually you're going to fight each other.
And you haven't got to worry about negotiations with different promoters and different TV. Yeah. You just say, you know, Joe Silver or Shelby will get together and they'll say, you two are fighting because you two are next in line, or this rematch is going to happen, and they'd usually sign the contract and that's it. But it'd be interesting to know. I feel a bit sorry for Holly, because she obviously wants to, she said she's used to fighting 3-4 times a year.
I don't feel sorry for her. She's just made the most money she's ever made.
Well, yes, that makes, yeah, when I sell for, but she's got no control. She has to now wait for Ronda, even though she's, yeah, now the champion. She's still being dictated to by what Ronda can do.
I think that won't work out the way they want it to. I don't think it can, because Ronda's doing two films. Then she made that comment about not being able to eat an apple for 6 months. It doesn't matter. Like, I know they want it on UFC 200, but if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's someone's A, health at risk, and B, they could do a show of Ronda and her, and it'll be a massive show anyway. Like, if UFC, they've got that banked for another later on, and it's better for both of them. I don't see it working out. I think they want it to, but I just think that there's too many things that will force it not to happen.
Well, I disagree. I think it will happen, because they're going to, they want it to happen. I don't think, yeah, it's just because it's UFC 200. I think it's because it's that new stadium as well in Vegas, the MGM,
which
is
timed for UFC 200.
Which they also, apparently, UFC might try and go for naming rights for that stadium. And I think it's the other side. It will be the other coin, which is that Ronda will rush back for it, because Dana said, look, we'll give you a rematch. This is when you'll do it. The whole thing about eating the apple, I think, or can't train for six. I mean, she could still probably train. She just can't take any. I think that was used as an example, but she just can't take any heavy impacts.
Yeah, which,
like sparring,
which is pretty big thing if you are sparring.
Yeah, but the one thing I would say is, I think she needs more time, And I don't, you know, I've listened to Joe Rogan say it, and I've listened to Brendan and
Mike Dolce.
As Dolce says it as well. They've all, I mean, I've heard some people say it. You need to give her time. She needs to get a proper camp, a long camp. But if they're going to rush her back, she does, what, two films? The Rock announced the other day that he was going to appear at WrestleMania 32. Is she going to show up there again and try and beat up Stephanie?
No.
Because if she does, and then suddenly it gets to April time, and then you're like, okay, now you've got 2-3 months to get your camp together, whilst all the time Holly has still been prepping and keeping herself ready, training with the likes of, you know, John Jones and Arlovski and Cerrone.
Yeah.
And then suddenly she comes back and, you know,
they're both going to get better, but if Holly's just solely focused on that.
Well, I don't know if they're both going to get better. I just think that Ronda's going to get better from the last fight. I just think she's going to come with a better game plan.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if that game plan's going to work in...
Yeah.
Because the worst case scenario is that she gets knocked out again inside a minute, and then suddenly...
If she loses, it's kind of... becomes a weirder situation, because she's in this kind of position where she can whoop everybody else in the division, but she's lost to the champion twice. So, and then she said herself she only wants to do it till she's 30 or 31. So it becomes a bit of it.
She pretty much said when she came out in that comment about not being able to eat the apple, she said, I want the rematch.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to win. She goes, if I don't win, then what else?
Yeah,
I'll have to do something else, because the way she is and the way she's wired, she has to be the best at what she does, at everything.
Mm.
And I don't think she's going to settle for fighting Miesha Tate and Betch Kahaya and Jessica Eye just going for another four fights until she gets another title fight.
Yeah,
she'll just be like, no, I'll go fight. And she'll find something else, attractive female like Ronda. She'll probably get into more movies. She's still a big star.
One interesting thing I heard about Roadhouse, though, is it, because it's supposed to be about, the original was about the biggest, baddest doorman in the land. I've not seen it. And so she's the biggest, baddest female in the world. But it kind of doesn't work, because she's doing all this shit in the film and Holly Holm just beat her. So it kind of, selling films based on that base. I don't know if a star falls or not, but she'll still get acting work for... Whether she'll get the same roles, I don't know. But
she's still got those connections. She'll probably end up in this. I say this, we've got WWE on in the background.
Shh,
but...
don't tell them that. That wasn't my choice, by the way.
She'll probably end up. She's a big WWE fan. I'm sure if she lost second,
She probably would do that. You're right.
And Vince turned up and said, "I'll tell you what," because they actually. I made a comment about The Rock, because they were like, "I don't know if The Rock's gonna appear at WrestleMania." They made a comment about The Rock on this on Instagram. He said, look, I am going to be there this year. He's supposed to be doing some films around the time that was going to prevent him. And then when they talked about last year's WrestleMania, they didn't refer to Ronda as the baddest one on the planet like they usually did.
Yeah.
They just referred, I can't remember what they referred to her as, but I remember listening to it thinking it doesn't have the same ring to it. It was something completely different. It was like, but Johanna came out this week and said, I think people need to realise it's not just about her being the best. Like, she's put women's MMA and women's sport on the map.
If they were to both to retire tomorrow, her and Holly, Ronda would probably go down as the greatest and Holly would be number two.
And one of my mates out in Sydney, who doesn't really follow UFC, watched the Ronda Holly fight, and he said, forgetting it was Ronda and UFC, he said it was the first time I've ever been interested in actually going to watch a women's only sport. Like, yes, I wouldn't, like, big tennis fans will go and watch the Wimbledon or US Open of the women, but he was like, I probably wouldn't watch that. I watch tennis
and I don't watch women's tennis.
Yeah, and he was like, it's the only time I've actually actively gone up and gone out to watch something that is just all women. Not putting it down, like, he's still interested in women's tennis, but he just wouldn't go out of his way. He would rather just see the results.
Yeah, definitely. I was hugely inspired by that. Well, my girlfriend bought me a Holly Holm t-shirt for Christmas. That's one thing.
Jump on the bandwagon.
I remember at the time just being hugely inspired. I knew that Holly was obviously a big religious girl, and I was thinking, I might become Christian here. It's like, it works. It gives you some sort of structure. And obviously, I wouldn't, because it's just not my thing, I wouldn't actually go down that route, but yeah, I remember thinking, wow, this is amazing. I didn't think it's amazing, but it's girls. I thought this is just incredible. It was just on a par, if not bigger in some respects. So, yeah, Ronda's done amazing things. But so is Holly. It's interesting. Shall we get on to some predictions?
195?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, should we start with, just before we jump into Ronda, we're talking about Connor, the fight pass prelim, which is Dustin Poirier, who I've already mentioned.
Joe Duffy.
The last guy to beat Connor.
Yeah.
Which I think, by the way, is great, and that they've put this on fight pass. For them as a business,
yeah,
it's going to get people to either... It does two things. It will get people to start downloading it, but also the people that pay for it at the moment are now getting a bit more value from it.
Yeah, I actually couldn't really care how much money UFC make, because I want them to make money so I can still keep watching their events, but I don't care about stars and money and stuff. I just want to see the fight. So for me as a fan, like, it's disappointing because I don't get to watch it at the time. But I understand why they've done it, and it is good for those people who've loyally bought Fight Pass because they get a genuinely good fight there.
But also, you mentioned something actually last week, whether or not it's just a goodwill gesture, because that fight was originally supposed to headline the Dublin cards that kind of fell to pieces, and now they're kind of giving back to those fans, saying, look, top fight, you guys are looking forward to it. I say top fight, good fight.
It is an important fight in it. I completely forgot about them in the lightweight mix. I mean, the winner of that kind of does go into that top 10 and start getting another big matchup with Tony Ferguson, Khabib, Cerrone, Connor, or anybody else who Nate Diaz, anyone who's floating around there. They go into that talk then, assuming how it goes down.
And Duffy, whilst he is Irish, I guess he's also... Well, say he's Irish. He's
Irish. Trains out of TriStar,
doesn't he? So who's your? Are we starting with that one?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to predict the other ones. I think Joe Duffy gets it done. Dustin Poirier has looked good at 155. He looks in shape. He looks healthy. He looks powerful. Exciting. I think he beat Yancy Medeiros. It's a tough guy, and he looked good. But when I've seen Joe Duffy, he looks really good, and he looks composed, he looks calm. And he was beating, the last fight I saw, he was beating someone on the feet. So they wrestled, they took him down, and he was like, okay, cool story. Just triangled him. He's comfortable on the ground, he's comfortable on the feet. He looks real class, he looks like a martial artist, real composed. And I think he'll win.
Well, I'm actually going to go Dustin Poirier. Probably for the same view, and you've kind of covered it. I think he's looking good at lightweight. He's looking stronger. I think Duffy's... I'll be honest, I haven't seen enough of his fights. I probably followed him more recently because of the whole kind of thing, and actually before this fight before. So I think he's going to be dangerous, and...
Yeah,
he's looked good since he's been in the UFC. I just think Dustin's probably got the kind of experience factor, and yeah, I just think he's been looking good. His last few fights, he's looked quite good and comfortable at lightweight.
Interesting thing is he coming back too quick, because he got a concussion. I don't know I can't remember what the state of the concussion was, but he got a concussion in training, which was why it was called off. So is he more susceptible now to a big puncher like Poirier? I don't know. It is a question above the fight, but yeah, I've got Joe Duffy for those reasons. And I think, I mean, I kind of, whoever wins, make this gonna be interesting. But if you're a Conor McGregor fan, and that does become more interesting if Joe Duffy wins, because, and wins in a good way, because then the question marks still rise. And And he's very much focused on fighting. You know, I think he said it at that Go Big press conference, that they asked him a question. He's like, yeah, this is great. I'm just fighting. That's my job. I don't really care about this. It's kind of not quite nice. I wear a suit, but end of the day, my job is fighting. He's just a guy who just seems obsessed, really obsessed with fighting. And it's his whole life. And he's thinking about it all the time. And that's why I think that, I don't know, I just get a good vibe off him in terms of this fight. So that's that one. Nothing on the preliminary.
The only thing on the preliminary was that obviously Carl Noak was originally supposed to be fighting
someone,
Kelvin Gastelum.
Yeah,
and he pulled out.
So he'd fancy him to win that later placement, considering he looked so good in his last fight.
Yeah,
return of Michael McDonald, who is in a competition with Ryan Hall to look like the least unlikely person to fight in a cage. Like, if you looked at them two on the street, you'd think, ah, okay, look at these two geeks. I'm going to fuck them up. And, like, they're both absolutely awesome. But that's interesting. I don't know much about the other guy, but I fancy him to get through that. If it's his first fight back in 2 years, I wouldn't have thought they'd throw him to the lions.
When was his lot? I know he lost
Uriah Faber. 2013 it was.
Oh, it is, yeah.
All right. Abel Trujillo versus Tony Sims.
I don't really know much about Tony Sims, yeah. And he hasn't got a wiki page to look at his records.
It's bad news, isn't it?
Bad news.
All right, next one. Brandao and Ortega. I've got Ortega in that one.
I'm actually going to go Brandao.
Ooh, interesting. I'm going with Ortega just because I think he's supposed to be a big star as well. And his last fight, he looked really, really impressive. It's a bit of a bloody mess from what I remember. But he looks like a... I think he's a ground guy, like a jiu-jitsu guy. Let me just check that. But yeah, that's who I've got for that. I think he looked really good, looked like he could be a bit of a future star, so that's why I'm going with him. Why have you got Brandao?
Yeah, I mean, Brandao, obviously his most notable defeat is Connor, and then before that he lost to Poirier. Yeah, so there is, he's won his last two by stoppage. I remember watching the watching one of the fights. I think it might have been the Machida Rockhold one. Oh no, it was the Barnett Nelson Japan when he won. He looked quite solid in that, jumping up on the, I remember him jumping up on the cage if he just won the title afterwards,
calling out Connor.
But he's just someone who I think has looked good. Yeah, he seemed it's like, I don't want to say that Connor has swayed me, but Connor has said when people lose to Connor they end up doing well, they end up going on a little bit of a run. And with the exception of Siva, I mean, it's happened to Poirier. And like I said, Brandao's two defeats have come to Dustin Poirier and McGregor. Then they were the two defeats in a row, and then he's won his last two. He's also got a victory over Bermudez, I think, Dennis Bermudez.
Brandao has?
Yeah.
It's been a while ago. Bermudez won quite a lot in a row, didn't he?
It was at one of the finales, one of the tough finales.
Mm.
See if I can find out which one it was.
Yeah, I remember...
It was armbar.
That Ortega fight, I can't remember who he beat, but it was a bit of a bloody mess. It was an exciting fight, and he looked sort of slick in the grappling department and looked like someone to watch out for. So yeah, that's why I've got Ortega. All right, Albert Tumanov versus Lorenz Larkin.
I'm going Albert Tumanov. What he did to Alain Joubert.
Yeah, it's like, oh shit, this guy can punch.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be... I'm going with him on that one.
Lorenz Larkin, though. Champion waiting.
Champion in waiting?
Yeah. Beat Robbie Lawler, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah. At middleweight, I think, in Strikeforce.
Robbie Lawler's had it.
So,
he did, yeah. On the Rockhold Kennedy card.
Yeah, so there you go.
He's also had a new contest with Mohammed's
Ollie.
Little, yeah. and beat Jean Valente.
There you go, so he's not a slouch.
But then he's lost two wins.
Costas Philippou, didn't he?
And Derek Bronson and Brad Tavares.
He beat them two?
No, he lost those when he was on three.
So he's obviously very competent. Very good if you can beat Lawler. But yeah, exactly same reason as you. Tumanov just blew Joe Ban out of the water.
I didn't know much about him before that fight, and then yeah, he just looked, you know, the thing I knew about Bowers that he was a Versace model, and he was
a good looking boy
coming off of some hype, and then yeah, he just got put in his place, and yeah, he just looked like quite a powerful puncher. Yeah. I was quite impressed with him on that fight.
Stipe Miocic versus Andre Arlovski.
Do you know, I was actually going to go with Arlovski on this originally, but after watching, I just think his last fight against Mir, he just didn't. It depends what Arlovski turns up. If it's the one who was slugging it out with Travis Brown, I think he might have a chance. If it's the one who turned up against Frank Mir, I think it's going to be.
Or Brendan Schaub is the same fight.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to go Stipe Miocic. I'm actually going to go with him. I think he looked. So who was he? Was
Beemar Hunt to fight. Supposed to fight Rothwell. Lost well a decision to Junior. He did lose that fight. People are like, oh, he looked good losing to it. And he did, but he did kind of lose it. He got knocked down. So, but he looked strong against
Mark Hunt.
Yeah. He did something similar to Roy Nelson, I think. He looks big, strong, athletic. And he's sort of coming into his prime, whereas Arlovski, he's had a good run, and he beat the Big Foot, who's sort of kind of just come off a TRT at the time. Whether that has an impact or not, I don't know, but he was definitely on it, and he beat Travis Brown, and apparently the word was that they used to train together.
Yeah.
And Arlovski always got the better in training camp, because I think he started obviously a lot earlier than Travis Brown, and so
they used to both train at Greg.
Yeah.
Jackson Wink.
But when they were trained together, like Travis Brown had just started, I think, and he'd already been world champion at UFC and fought Couture and Tim Sylvia and people like that. So
what I would say about that fight is, I think if Arlovski can win in style and not do it like the Frank Mir fight, I think he'll be next in line for the heavyweight.
Ooh, what about Overeem though?
No, but then I think if Stipe wins, yeah, I think I'll give it to Overeem, because Dana's already made a comment to Stipe saying you need to be more sellable, and so I think if Arlovski wins, Arlovski's sellable, right? Like, he's been champ before, he's left the division, he's come back, he's
come now back put story, together, yeah,
put these everybody this loves win him streak. And then suddenly you just keep going back to this Greg Jackson being the mastermind.
Yeah.
But if he loses, but his performances haven't been great. And I actually think if he'd beaten or finished Frank Mir, he may well have got the title shot next.
Mm.
But because it was such a poor performance against Frank Mir, where Frank Mir could have easily taken.
I don't know about it, poor performance. I mean, Frank Mir, he had a bad run, but he's still a dangerous guy. He's still knocked two people out.
Frank Mir could have won that fight.
Yeah.
I think that could have gone. And when I say poor, it wasn't like it was a decisive.
It wasn't a decisive win, no. And then, especially after just off the back of that Travis Brown fight, which is one of my favourite fights ever, it was just an amazing performance. And you learn about his calf, you're like, wow, this guy is awesome. And then to go from that, it's like almost like a step back in a way.
Yeah. And that's why I think that's my theory as to why UFC held off announcing who was going to be next for Doom, because they were trying to weigh up the division, because I was listening to something the other day where they originally said it wouldn't be an automatic rematch, and I think kind of everything that was happening in that division just kind of forced their hand to say, actually, let's just give Kane a rematch, because there was no one that was, unlike what we're saying about the featherweight division where there was a clear number one contender.
Yeah.
The heavyweight division, there wasn't a clear number one contender.
Well, there were several that you could have a good shout.
There was people saying the Santos just came off a victory, and
yeah,
Overeem came off victory, and everyone was coming off like one or two victories. Arlovski was the only one I think who'd put some kind of a run together.
Mir on a comeback, but he'd had a bad run before.
Yeah, so I think if Arlovski wins this, I think that versus Vadum versus winner of Vadum Kane. I think if he loses, I just think because they've said before, Miocic isn't sellable, I think they might say, well, we'll give you another fight, and then in the meantime, Overeem, the guy they probably wanted to have a title shot for years.
Yeah. It should be sellable though, Stipe, because he's a fireman. Like, he should be celebrating this guy. He goes to work, protects people, and also is an elite MMA fighter on the side as a part-time job. He's a top five guy, so we should be getting right on the back of this guy. I think we haven't really touched about that Overeem Dos Santos fight, but the thing about Overeem in...
Which we both said Overeem would win that.
Yeah. So we know we did pretty shit on the rest of the predictions, but we did all right on that one. The thing about, he did look great in that, and the thing is, he ran his contract down. So whether he's thinking about going elsewhere or not, if he was to go elsewhere, it kind of makes a bit of a mockery, not a mockery, but he's just beat Junior De Santos, their number one or two ranked guy or whatever, and it's like, you know, you got a champion over there, but I just beat Verdum in, well, I didn't just beat him, he beat Verdum in Strikeforce, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I've beaten your champion before, and I just beat your number one guy. So that's why I think they might use that in negotiations for a new contract. I mean, it'd be daft not to use that, but I think that's what he might be waiting for. But
I think he's got a lot more. He's got a lot more power now than he had. He probably has a lot more power now that things have gone in his favour. Obviously, him beating Junior Santos, that's him doing. The Verdum victory over Kane has probably worked in his favour a little bit because he's got something else to say.
Yeah.
So things have gone for him, and he's obviously done stuff for himself. And it's sometimes, like you said, it's good to. It was risky, I think, letting his contract run down, because had he lost to Dos Santos,
Roy Nelson did it. He let his contract run down and lost to Stipe. So it's a dangerous game to play. But fair play to him for rolling that dice. Good luck to him.
Yeah. And Roy Nelson has kind of. I mean, he still came back, didn't he? Fought Barnett in Japan. He's one of those fighters.
He's fought other people. I think he fought Overeen in there as well, actually, Nelson. But after that fight, it wasn't his last fight. But the point was, there was something like he that was what he was doing because he wanted a bigger contract because he kept complaining about it. And then his wife came down and bollocked him in like between rounds two or three or something because he was just getting his ass whooped by Stipe.
When we're talking about that, Lorenzo announced the other day that they've done 600 million revenue this year, the UFC, which is their biggest year in 2015.
Yeah.
And someone made a comment being like, well, you know, you're making all this money and what about the fighters paying? He said, look, the fighters have the option of running down their contracts and they have other options out there. So they're in control of it. And he's like, I'm not going to. You don't just go round to everyone. If you owned a business, you wouldn't just go round to everyone and say, well, everyone's got a pay rise of this much. Like, you have to be smart about a business. You have to. If I went up to my manager over there and said I want a pay rise, I'd have to prove why I deserve a pay rise. And at the same time, they're not going to turn around and say, well, if we're giving you a pay rise, I'm going to give everyone a pay rise. Because then suddenly that revenue you've made become poor ref. That revenue you made becomes poor, becomes less.
The other thing is, like, I don't enough information because that might be their revenue, but their cost might be 599,999,000. Yeah. So yeah. That's not 600 million profit. They're just going to have a bath in the money. That's 600 million that they brought in. So how much did they spend, and what are they investing that? There's too many questions to really get into a discussion for that. I mean, my understanding is they're not poor, the Fertittas in Dana White. So, you know, you just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I would assume
that if they're making that much money and they're saying it's their best year, I'd assume they're making money and not losing money because they've been going for quite a while now. But it's going back to what Lorenzo said, being like, there are options out there. So if fighters want to take the risk, you've now got Bellator, which is
but it's
Viacom, kind of, isn't it? Which they've said have probably got more money than UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really want to discuss it because I just don't know enough about it, to be honest. And fair play to Benson and Overeem for going along this route, and it gives them more power. It's a risk, and they took it, and it seems to be working out for them. So, but it makes it interesting. If Overeem got the title shot, if I'm Ben Rothwell, I'm thinking, what the fuck, man? I knocked this guy out a year ago, and now he's got a title, and I haven't lost since. So, yeah, I know it's a. We'll see how that plans out, but yeah, both going for Stipe in that one, and the main event.
The main event, I'm going Condit.
I am as well.
Oh.
We're
starting off the new year with. Well, new champs. Seven new champions last year, and we're starting 2016 with a brand new welterweight champ.
Well, we'll see. I just think that, so Lawler's class has come, much story has been amazing, and even though I said earlier on that I think he lost the Hendricks fight, he still, to show that heart in round 4 and 5 and really go after it, knowing at the end of the first one he got taken down and he was kind of knew he was losing it, to still go after it even though he could have easily thought he was three rounds down, it's amazing. Obviously the McDonald fight was class, but he did lose rounds 2, 3, and 4 on a judge's scorecards. I really like McDonald. I was actually surprised that he didn't win that. I thought he was going to come through that, and fair play to Lawler. He took all the anything that McDonald threw at him and then just put him into about as much pain as I've ever seen anyone in ever with that shot on the nose. So he came through that, and yeah, he's just looked really good since he's come back to the UFC, and it's a great story. But I think that where McDonald sort of technically picks him apart, Condit's more of a finisher. So if Condit gets as many opportunities as McDonald gets, I think he puts Lawler away. But I mean, that's the style that McDonald fights. He's more technical and gets more kind of, he's a bit more conservative and picks people apart over a longer time, whereas Condit is more of a finisher. But I just think that he'll find an opportunity to knock Lawler out. So there you go.
I'm thinking that this style of fight is much better for Condit. As in, if Condit was fighting Hendricks,
yeah,
he's always going to take him down.
Lawler's not.
GSP did the same.
Yeah.
Lawler's not going to take him down. Actually, it goes to what we were saying about the way you train fights. The Aldo McGregor fight was better for McGregor than possibly other fights are. And I think this is the fight, and this is why they've made the fight. It's because it's they're expecting it to be a great fight for fans. It's going to be two guys who are going to go in there, stand up, and throw the punches and kicks. The reason I think we talk about whether or not Condit deserved this shot, one of the things we forget is that this fight was originally booked for the Melbourne cards.
Mm.
And I think that's why they did it, was to get more fans. And then kind of when that fell through, they couldn't turn around and say, all right, well, it's postponed for a month, so actually we're going to change it around. They kind of promised it to Condit. He signed the contract. I just think this fight is perfect for Carlos. It was when he fought Diaz, he got the better of, even though it was a close fight, he got the better of Diaz. And I don't think he'll finish Lawler. Mm. Lawler seems to be taking a few shots. But then again, he's taken so many shots over his last, Hendricks, Lawler, McDonald's.
Mm.
Could be about time that all these shots are going to pay off, and if he's getting kicked and kneed and elbowed by Condit.
Ellenberger in there as well.
Yeah.
Who was looking okay in the second round, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. What's kind of beautiful about it, in a way, is that they can both concentrate on their strengths. Like, Robbie can stand there, practice his stand-up, train and work on that. Carlos can do the same thing. And whoever is the better fighter in stand-up will come out on top. It's a styles make fights, and that'll make a great stand-up war. And, yeah, it is an exciting fight. And although I said that I think that Hendricks should have got it at the time, I can see them thinking, well, Carlos Condit's a great, exciting fighter. People like him. It's never a boring fight with that guy, so let's put him and Robbie in. It's a dream fight. And yeah, we'll see what happens. We will finish off here, I guess. Anything, just Twitter and that, or you're not bothering?
At Adubs 16 on Twitter.
You're still not changing.
At Adubs. So it's going to be 16. So at Adubs 10 on Instagram. And at Adubs 10. Adubs 16 on Twitter.
So they're both Adubs 16.
No, Adubs 10 is Instagram. Follow me on Instagram, Adubs 10.
Right.
Or follow me on Twitter, Adubs 16.
I have them the same. It's at RJ Cook. I can't even say it now. At RJK World Tour for both Twitter and Instagram. And Facebook is /RJK World Tour. Only thing I'm doing is I am giving away free wristbands for those who write me an iTunes review. It takes 2 minutes. It helps the show out a lot. And if you've got something out of it and you've got this far, take another 2 minutes to leave a review. It really helps me out. I'd appreciate it much. and I'll show that appreciation by sending you a free wristband. Just hit me up on those social media channels when you've done that. All right, see you later, guys.